Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome. I hope your week has gone well. I'm super excited that it's Friday. I love going to Friday Night Magic and playing, and I hope that you get to get out there and do that as well. Before we dive into the interview today, I want to share something with you that I'm super excited about. Many of you have asked for MTG Pro Tutor merchandise, and I finally got the t-shirts made. So, if you go to mtgprotutor.com/t-shirt, you will find two styles to choose from. One says Hero Among Planeswalkers on the back, and the other says Depart Every Plane Victorious. I'm really pleased with how they turned out, and I'm super excited to share them with you. You can choose either style or both. We have sizes in small, medium, large, extra large, and we even have a woman's cut and woman's sizes. So I'm pretty excited. I think they look pretty cool. The font on the back was actually designed by a fellow prodigy. In the Facebook group, we were talking about different fonts and different phrases, and one of the members of the group, Charles, stepped up and said, "Hey, I'm a designer. I'd like to take a crack at it." And he designed a really cool font. So if you're interested in representing the Pro Tutor prodigies, then head on over to mtgprotutor.com/t-shirt and pick up a t-shirt today. They're being printed right now and will be mailed out the first week of September. So you can order them now and they'll be in the mail the first week of September. I know I'm going to be rocking them at Friday Night Magic, and especially when I go to Grand Prix and things like that. I can't wait to go to events and see other prodigies out there wearing it, and we can have that instant connection. It's going to be so cool. Well, we have an awesome guest coming on today. He's going to share the one secret that made him a Grand Prix champion. So definitely stay tuned for the whole episode. And with that, let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about magic.
What's up, everybody? I am super pumped to have our amazing guest with us today. Our guest has a degree in mechatronics engineering. He's married and has a six-month-old son. He has been playing Magic since Visions, took a break in Odyssey, and then got back in during Zendikar. He's the champion of Grand Prix Toronto and made top eight of Grand Prix Montreal. He's much better at limited than constructed and is actively trying to be less hyperbolic. Coming to us from Toronto, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Robert Lombardi. Robert, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's take a treasure cruise.
Yes. Now, all you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Robert, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at Robert Lombardi Zero. That's the number zero. So you can hit him up there, ask him questions, and dive into Magic. So first of all, Robert, we love to go into a little bit about what you have going on outside of Magic. And we mentioned mechatronics engineering. What the heck is that?
Yeah, that's mostly what my family said when I told them that's what the degree I was taking. So it's basically robotics engineering, but my major was focusing more on the software control aspects of robotic systems.
Okay, so software control aspect. Neat, very neat. Awesome. And do you do that actively? Is that what you do for a job? You do robots and stuff?
No, absolutely not. So I worked at BlackBerry as a lead concept designer on the advanced tech team for 5 years. And then I recently hopped over to TELUS, which is one of the big carriers in Canada, doing a product ownership of our sales platform.
Excellent. All right. Very neat. And you're a family man. That's great. That's near and dear to my heart, being a family man myself. So you're married, have a six-month-old son. So obviously Magic has been around longer than, I guess, your family has. So I would love to talk a little bit about that. How do you do it? How do you be married? How do you have a son? And how do you still competitively play Magic?
Yeah, it's a good question. I thought that after I had the kid that it would be a lot harder to do good at tournaments. I think maybe I'm just evolving as a player and you know, having a better mindset when I'm actually at the game. So I play like a lot less casually with my friends now. It's just like when something big's coming up, then I'll, you know, kind of put everything aside for a week or so and really focus on the testing aspect with my close group of friends here locally, and then, you know, put in a good effort for that event. My wife is super awesome and very forgiving and understanding, though, so that definitely helps.
Yeah, no kidding. That's something that we have in common. I thought when I got married that, you know, gaming would just kind of go out the window. That's it, you know, and I was ready to do it. I was ready to give it all up for my wife and everything. But I was very fortunate. Caitlin loves gaming as well. And actually, when we were dating, I was doing Star Wars role-playing game with my friends in college. And then when she came back after the summer, I was like, you know, because I was telling her about this over the phone, and she had no idea what role-playing was. She has two older sisters and, you know, never really did anything like that. But anyways, I was like, you know, if you were you know, to like roll a character, what would you be? And we were only level 4 at the time, right? So it was really easy for her to catch up. And so I kind of got her in, and she got into it and the whole story thing. And since then, she's, you know, become a big gamer and supports me in Magic. And we play lots of other games together. We don't play Magic with each other because she's not into that. But we do tons of board games and lots of other stuff. And so I'm with you and very grateful, as you are, to have a very supportive and loving wife.
Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. So you mentioned that you came in on Visions. That's usually one of the things that we like to go back on, is talk about our guest's origin story, like where you first got into Magic. So can you tell us that story? What was it like? Who were you with? How did you first dive into Magic?
Yeah, so the first cards I actually purchased was a 4th edition starter deck, and it was probably in 95. And I was just like at a card convention with my parents, and I saw the packaging, and I think there was like a dragon or something on it. And I was like 10 or 11, and just, you know, completely infatuated with fantasy at the time. Dragons being like the peak of fantasy, obviously. And I was like, you know, I got to have this, Mom. Like, you got to buy me this box. It's the coolest thing ever. So I bought it, and I thought like it was a game that like I could play with either my friends or my parents. And like, as probably everyone is now aware, one starter deck of Magic is not what you need, you know, to do something useful with, right? So they just kind of sat in my closet for, I guess, 2 years. And then randomly my friends were playing with Magic cards. And I was like, hey, I have some of these. I'll go get them. Then you guys can teach me how to play this game. So that was in 96 or 97, whenever Visions came out. And, you know, they taught me how to play. And then a couple weeks later, we went to the local shop and bought a few booster packs and, you know, kind of pooled our collections together and tried to make decks that weren't completely awful. But, you know, we didn't get there for a few months.
Love it. That's great. I love it. That's a great story. Just hearing everyone's origins is so fun and fascinating to me. Since then, what's been your favorite set?
That's a good question. I guess probably Khans of Tarkir, just because the limited format was so great. In terms of like the content and the lore, I'm not very deep into that, and how a set affects Standard or Modern, I'm not too concerned about that either. But if a set is good to draft, then I am in, and Khans was sweet to draft.
Okay. So when someone mentions a set that I guess has a little bit of flavor, I usually like to go into like what guild would you be, or in this case, what clan you would be if you were in that world, but you're not really a lore guy.
Yeah. I don't know how I would answer that, I guess.
No worries, no worries. We'll just have to leave it a mystery. You'll be a planeswalker. You're just kind of in and out. You're not really part of any of those.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess along the...
part of the guild list, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Along the same lines, what is one of your favorite cards?
I guess it would have to be Lightning Bolt. That card's probably won me more matches of Magic than any other card by a very fair margin.
All right. Well, for those of us who don't know what that card is, will you please tell us what it is, what it does, and why you like it?
Sure. It's a red instant that is just one red to cast, and it does 3 damage to a creature or player. I like it because of its, high power level, obviously, and its versatility. So, you know, you can put it in control decks where you're trying to control the board and you want a very cheap answer to early threats, but you don't want a dead card late in the game. Or you can put it in aggro decks where you may want to clear a blocker so you can get your small attackers through, but in the late game, it gives you a little bit of reach. And, you know, mid-range decks, it obviously does place both sides of the field there very well, too. So just very high versatility, very high impact card.
Versatility, that's definitely the word that comes to mind when you lay it out like that, for sure. That's awesome. So all of our journeys have highs and lows, and we all, you know, learn from the ups as well as the downs. And we really want to hone in on 2 stories. The first one being your worst Magic moment. What was that? And more specifically, what did you learn from that experience?
I mean, I have pretty good Magic moments overall. So my worst moment really isn't even that bad. But not too long ago in like Pharaoh, when Born of the Gods came out, I lost a PTQ finals when those were still being run to Paul Dean. And he beat me with the card Flamecast Wheel. People probably didn't even know what that does. And it wasn't a very well played card in that format. It's like a 1 mana artifact. You can pay 5 mana, tap and sack it to do 3 damage to target creature or player. So at that time, like, I just considered this card completely unplayable, right? It would just never make my deck. which is reasonable, right? Like if you listen to a lot of podcasts and theory on Unlimited about that format, no one's recommending that you put Flamecast Wheel in your deck and try and run it for value. And when he drew it, was elated that he got to cast it and kill my my flyer, which ended up winning him the match. I was just like so livid that I could lose to such a bad card. My takeaway from that is really that, you know, that card is definitely subpar. It's not like you're trying to run this card in your deck, but he did side it incorrectly, and it did what he needed it to do, which was make sure that I wasn't going over top of his kind of like red-green ground pounder deck. So the real takeaway is like, I guess you need to expand your range of cards that you're willing to play, because like most of the stuff that Wizards puts in the set is there for one reason or another.
I like that. Expand your range. Like you said, subpar cards, when used correctly, have a place. That doesn't mean you need to be actively trying to find a spot for every bad card that you have in your pool, but recognize what scenarios certain cards are for. And like you said, expand your range, and don't be afraid to put it in there, even though all the articles and podcasts and friends say, oh, that's an unplayable card.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's awesome. So on the flip side of that are our highs and our proud moments. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
Yeah, winning GP Toronto was pretty sweet, I guess.
What was it like? What did it feel like?
I don't know. It's a pretty surreal experience. Like, I can't really describe it just because, you know, in day two, like, I was very focused. I was like, okay, I'm coming in at X1. If I X1 again in day two, like, I can make top eight. I can finally get back on the pro tour. I was like, okay, like, let's do this, right? So you spend a lot of mental energy being very focused in the matches, and you're trying to play very tight, so you're thinking about a lot of things very deeply. And then when you get into top eight, it's even worse, right? Like, okay, I can't make a mistake. You're hyper-analyzing every situation. So when it's done, your brain, it's like when you're done school or whatever, right? You've done your last exam for the semester, and your brain's just like, wait, I have nothing to think about right now? And it's just, like, completely mushy. And I don't know. There's no words to really describe, like, how that feels, but it was definitely a good feeling, I guess. I think I would have been pretty crushed if I lost to Green-White in the finals after beating it all day on Saturday and Sunday.
So what format was that? Standard?
That was Standard, yeah.
Yeah. And what were you doing leading up to the Grand Prix? As in, how much were you playing? What were those play test sessions like so you get the most out of it? What did it take preparation-wise to get you to a point where you could take down a Grand Prix?
I guess in a unfortunate series of events that ended up being fortunate for me, I was like let go from my job a couple months before that, but I had some like a good amount of severance, so I could take some time off, and I was hanging out with my new baby anyways, so it kind of worked out, and I didn't start my new job until after the GP was going to be over. So I just kind of really focused on testing like 6 hours a day or so with my friends. I was like, okay, look, I have the time. You guys have the time. Like, let's actually prep for this event properly. Let's build a gauntlet. Let's constantly run matches and see if we can, you know, come to a conclusion about a deck that has a good matchup about what we think the metagame is going to be. So we tested a lot of different decks and came up with some real stupid ideas. But in the end, Esper kind of fell to the way I play Magic well in Constructed. And I felt that it had a very good matchup against Green-White and the Green-Black Aristocrats deck, which I thought were going to be very popular that weekend. So I ran probably hundreds of games against those two decks with my friends who were both on Aristocrats and Green-White, because the play styles of those decks suited their personalities better. But yeah, it was just, you know, you have to just play tons of games, know your sideboard and your main deck in and out, and know like what your game plan is in every match. A little luck doesn't hurt either.
A little luck, yes, a little luck. Well, I mean, that is part of the game. So how did you know that Esper fit your play style more? How did you come to that self-realization?
So the deck just has like a lot of play to it, like from the beginning stages to the end. So you're a control deck, but you can take a proactive stance at certain parts of the game where it's advantageous to do that. So, you know, if it looks like, okay, it's time to tap out and play Ojutai and then start, you know, beating down my opponent and getting advantage that way, the deck can like kind of turn the corner and like really put the pressure on the opponent to start responding. And it has very proactive answers in the early game with like transgress and Jace to filter stuff out of your hand, and then, you know, some interactive counter spells and removal there to make sure that the board's clear or like not too cluttered when you drop an Ojutai down. And I just think Silumgar's command is, well, I mean, counterspell is just insane, right? So if you can put counterspell in your deck without losing anything, it's probably a pretty good idea as a place to start.
And for you, how did you know that that was your style of deck? Where along the line did you say, hey, or have you said, like, I'm this kind of player? Or just at the time, is that the deck that resonated with you?
Yeah, so early in my Magic career, I was more of an aggro player. Like, I played a lot of, like, red deck wins style decks just because they kind of put the pressure on the opponent to have answers. And I don't know, like a lot of people, if you're playing in a not too competitive setting, those decks are typically very good because they close the game out quickly, and a lot of people don't build their decks in a way that can combat that kind of strategy if they're, you know, not well-versed in playing like large events or knowing the metagame well. And then I kind of evolved from there to play, like once I became a better player, playing more complicated mid-range and combo decks. And I've been playing a lot of Amulet Bloom in Modern, which had a lot of decisions from your perspective as the player. Like, you have to do a lot of things right to win. If you make one wrong decision, you can lose. But if you do everything right, you have a very high percentage to win. So I felt that the Esper deck kind of had – it doesn't have the same play style, but it has the same impact in your ability to make decisions really affect the outcome of your win rate. So if you know your matchups well and you're making good decisions – then you should be able to win almost any, you know, any match. You're not kind of completely blown out. The black-white deck kind of came out that weekend as well, and that's a terrible matchup for Esper. And I was definitely not prepared for it, so I'm glad that those guys kind of lost in the first round of the top eight. But in terms of the decks I knew about, like, I knew that I could make better decisions than my opponent turn after turn, and that gaining those like very tiny incremental advantages would end up allowing me to win matches that I would lose if I was playing a deck that kind of had a less control over the end outcome of the match.
That's fascinating, because we always hear, oh, like, find what style of player you are and find a deck that fits that. And so I'm always curious to learn, how do people even know, you know, what kind of player they are? And it just comes down to, what kind of decks have you played or have you liked playing, you know, when you got into Magic and stuff like that? And that's kind of the introspection that needs to go on for players to kind of realize what they like and what decks speak well to them. And then you said that your friends, they play decks that they resonated with, which ended up being Aristocrats and Green-White. But then you also mentioned that you guys ran the Gauntlet. So did you at any time play against other decks, and how did you decide who played what? And then at what point do you guys just play the decks that you're going to play and stop kind of testing against other decks?
Yeah, so we like, you know, it was pretty versatile. Like, I was sometimes piloting Bant, or sometimes piloting Mono White, or sometimes piloting Aristocrats against, you know, whoever was piloting whatever they needed to pilot at that time. So I mean, my testing group is full of, you know, pretty well versed players that have, you know, some reasonable finishes or have made the Pro Tour before, so I feel confident in their ability to make, you know, at least reasonable decisions most of the time with, you know, kind of any given deck. It's just that, you know, in their testing, they felt like, okay, you know, Aristocrats is very powerful, and I'm going to take the risk of people being able to hate it out because, like, the deck can just do very crazy things. Where I was, like, on the side of, well, I don't really want... I want to be the one that has the sideboard hate for Aristocrats that kills all the people that think the deck is very powerful. You know, by playtesting that matchup a bunch is why I came to the conclusion of, like, putting those two Kalidas' main deck that Shota had in the board from the Pro Tour. And that, like, made a huge difference in my ability to win game ones against both Green-White Togens and Green-Black Aristocrats throughout the tournament. It wasn't bad against Mono White either.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I bet not. That's awesome. So I love hearing that, just getting a glimpse into how people study the game and play. And that's just awesome. And so obviously, both through playtesting and even in competitive Magic, you've played thousands of games against hundreds of different people, and you've just seen and learned so much. And we love that. We love that knowledge. We want to, you know, dive into it, because we, the Prodigies, know that we can't win every time, but we can learn every time. And so in your experience, what has been the biggest mistake that players make? And then what can we do to avoid that mistake?
Yeah, I guess it kind of goes back to my story about the Flamecast wheel. Yeah. I think that in general, like players don't really give. I'm going to focus on draft and sealed, I guess, because that's more my forte, and I spend a lot more time theory crafting about those formats. But players don't really give themselves the best chance all the time of ending up with a good deck for either their seat in a draft or their sealed pool. And this like inability to kind of open your range and be willing to play different strategies that are outside the norm for what you think is good or what you've been told is good, like kind of affects players at different levels in different ways. So like very new players, like I'll see them come into the, FNM or whatever, and they've been playing for a few months or a year or whatever, and they're just like, sit down, haven't cracked a pack yet, and they're like, man, I can't wait to open some werewolves and draft werewolves. It's like, okay, like this is fine. You're new. If you're not focused on maximizing your ability to win the draft and you're just there to have fun, hang out with your friends for a few hours, like this is totally reasonable, right? Like, so how do you have fun playing Magic? Well, I have fun playing Magic, drafting werewolves and then trying to build a good werewolf deck. It's like, okay, cool, that's fine. But for people that want to progress their game and get better, like they can't restrict themselves to just kind of knowing like, oh, I'm going to be the zombies deck before you even open your pack, right? Like what happens when you open Gisela? You need to be able right. to know what to do with that, right? And so that, like, at a very basic level, this affects like much newer novice players that are still kind of like, I would consider casual and like how they treat Magic. Then you kind of have the people that upgrade past that, they start to become competitive or casual competitive. They know like what cards are good and what cards are bad. And they're so focused on drafting like quote unquote good decks that have quote unquote good cards in them that when their draft starts going off the rails and they can't really like, they're not getting the deck they want to get, they can't get out of the tracks they're in. And they just keep taking cards that would normally be good if I could just, sculpt the next 10 picks that I'm going to get. But because I can't, you need to really start thinking about like, okay, what did I see? And maybe some of those wonky bad cards that I saw are actually like what my strategy needs to be able to actually close matches. So normally I wouldn't take a 1-1 flyer for one, but if I get like a late, a card like Borrowed Grace or Trumpet Blast or something, and my creatures kind of suck and I can't get through, then maybe I'm going to start picking up as many Suntail Hawks as I can just to try and get in some early damage and hope to get lucky with a, a Trumpet Blast for like 12 or 15 or something at some point in the game. And if you like, if you limit yourself from being able to play these strategies, then it's not going to affect every draft you have. Like maybe 1 in 20, you're just going to end up with a deck that's very bad. You're probably going to go 1-2 or 0-3 and be like, I don't know what happened here. I drafted all the good cards. I tried to, stick to the strategy and I wasn't married to my first picks, but I still lost. When really like a deck that wasn't great, but probably would allow you to go 2-1 kind of went past you and you were like completely blind to seeing that strategy and how to build it.
Very interesting. Yeah, it's neat to hear you talk about it that way and definitely eye-opening. And so be cognizant of where you're at along that spectrum and understand if you want to, move to the next level that you have to be able to do well with what you do open. You can't just be on rails, like you said. And when things start going off track, be able to deal with that as well. And like that's really, really neat. It's always fun to see what we can learn from, I guess, the, mistakes of others, but there's so much that we can learn about, ourselves as we go through Magic. So turning the lens inward on you, what's been the deepest thing that you learned about yourself from playing Magic?
I guess I was a sore loser, I guess, when I started playing. And I think it was just because, I was very hyper-competitive. Like, when I was younger, I was, very into sports. I was very competitive in sports. I was very competitive in school with my grades and stuff. And then in Magic, like, this kind of, translated as well. And so it wasn't until, maybe after college when I matured quite a bit that I was like, I really thought about it. Why am I getting mad at my opponent for beating me with bad, what I consider bad cards or for, top decking 3 cards in a row at the perfect time to get out of a game that seemed like completely unwinnable for them. Like it's not their fault, right? You shouldn't punish them for for beating you. Like, yeah, I don't think that's fair. I see a lot of people do that and I think it's bad, but most Magic players that are competitive are are like kind of have that mindset, and they can be kind of rude at times, but you really have to be conscious of that because, you know, not everyone's playing the game for the same reasons you are, right?
That's so true. I remember when I had that realization, which was basically everyone loves winning. Just like I love winning, my opponent loves winning. And so I don't want to detract from their victory by being a sourpuss, you know, just like I don't like it when, you know, I win and they're all like salty and mean about it. And so I've been working really hard to just stay positive and remember it's a game and not, again, detract from their victory by being all like salty when they win. Because, you know, like you said, it's like, why am I mad at them? Like, I put myself in this situation to play this game and understanding that losing is a fact and it's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. I think LSV is like the main cheerleader for like that mode of operation for players. And I think he's doing a very good job in changing a lot of people's mindsets. So kudos to him for kind of being a good sport.
Yeah, agreed. So Robert, if you could have a conversation with yourself 10 years ago, knowing what you know now, what would you say?
A conversation with myself 10 years ago. Oh geez. I would have been like 22. I guess I would have told myself not, you want it to be related to magic or just related to life?
Ooh, well, if you want to go there, we'll start with magic. We'll start with magic.
I guess I would have told myself not to get out of the game and instead just stay in it even loosely and not to sell all of my cards. Cause, like, I don't have a play set of like all those sweet Urza's Block cards or a full set of Duel Lands anymore. So I'm really like limited in my ability to play Legacy. For example.
Oh man. Don't get out of the game. Awesome. And so then I guess life related, what would you say?
I would have skipped out on going to college and went straight to university.
Okay, so for some of us that sounds pretty much the same thing.
Oh yeah, for us Canadians.
So what do you mean?
So, yeah, college in Canada is like a technical school.
Okay.
So it's like a 2 or 3 year diploma program. Typically focused at like trades or hands-on workplace stuff, whereas like university is like all theory, engineering, science, stuff like that.
Got it. Okay, very neat, very neat. That's always and so it's always neat to kind of do a little bit of, you know, retrospection and see where we're at. So back into, you know, Magic and the competitive scene and your finishes and whatnot. How many pro points do you have right now?
Yeah, I have 17.
Oh my gosh. Are you going to finish the season with 17 or are you going to?
Yeah, the season's over. I have 17 in the season.
Oh, my goodness. And for those of you who don't know, 18 is silver. So you missed it by a point.
Yeah, it's because I couldn't actually attend Sydney because I started the new job. So I didn't have the holidays to kind of, you know, go over to Australia and waste a week for 2 weeks or whatever. So I pushed everything out to Honolulu for Kaladesh. But, okay. I did that before I top aided GP Montreal and before I picked up a point at Pittsburgh. So it seemed like a good decision at the time.
Got it. I was going to say, because didn't they give everybody a point or the points for not being able to make it because of the whole visa thing or whatever? So I didn't know if you fell under that.
Yeah, yeah. So I have 14 points without the Pro Tour qualification points. And you get 3 for like queuing and scrubbing out of the Pro Tour.
Oh, man. Well, all right. So you can make another run for it next year, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up, Sean. Jeez.
I mean, you've shown that you had the caliber. You've shown that you're able to do it. So I don't expect you to do anything less than what you've already done and totally make it this time. So
yeah, I hope so. Hopefully I have a reasonable showing at Kaladesh. It'll be interesting because it's a very fresh format being a new block.
Yes.
So hopefully my creative juices are flowing and I find a deck that's good and I kind of get paired up with some folks that I know that are also queued and we have some reasonable success at being able to build a good deck.
Well, that'll be fun. I love watching past guests go on and do great things. Like the most recent Pro Tour, it was a blast for me because I got to, again, I like cheering for past guests and to see Lucas Blohan go on and win. I'm like, yay, because, you know, he was a past guest of the show, episode 61. And so that was always fun to see that. And so I'm looking forward to now following you and cheering for you and seeing how you do. And that should be awesome. So like you said, hopefully your creative juices are flowing and you get something good, especially
I'll try not to disappoint.
So on the topic of like creative juices and that whole creative side, what makes Magic fun for you, Robert? Why do you play Magic?
I really like the deck building aspect of it, which is probably why I like limited and sealed so much. Before, when I was awful at draft, I played a lot of constructed, and I like, brewed tons of very wacky, weird decks, like just to kind of see, you know, does this strategy work? Or like, no one's playing this card, but this card seems good. Like, can I make this card good? You know, kind of doing that whole like Conley Woods, Travis Wu kind of thing, but you know, not as effective, obviously. So yeah, I really like that, the creative aspect you get when you're deck building, right? Because you have so many decisions available to you, and you know, draft has, you know, every pick is a decision. And then at the end, you're stuck with these 42 cards. And then you have to combine them in a way that, you know, gives you the best chance at trying to win matches throughout the event. So yeah, that's, you know, mostly why, or what excites me, I guess, about Magic. Winning's not bad either. I do like to win.
Oh, of course. There's just something about Magic. I mean, it just draws the competitive people. Cause a lot of people say, oh, like I'm a really competitive person. And I think to some degree, I think almost everybody who gets into Magic has to have some kind of that competitive streak. And I mean, maybe there are, or maybe it's just because the people that we're around are the competitive ones, and there probably are straight up pure casual people that I never even see who like Magic, but at least the ones that, you know, are on the podcast and we run circles with, they all have that competitive streak, and somewhere deep down inside, they like winning, which, you know, isn't surprising.
Yep, absolutely.
So what would you say to a brand new Magic player? Someone who they just started, you know, recently, they're getting in, they love it. And then they start realizing, whoa, this could be a pretty, you know, expensive game. And they can't build the most popular deck every week. They can't draft every day online. How can these new players really dive in to Magic?
Yeah, so I think there's like definitely two things that they can do to help them be cost effective. The first is to like fix your Magic habit by like watching a lot more content. Like CFB posts all kinds of stuff. There's like tons of Twitch streamers. There's like all kinds of Grand Prix and Pro Tour coverage where people are playing at very high levels and you can learn a lot from. So I think that, you know, if you're interested in getting better, you can definitely like get your fix, your Magic fix by, you know, looking back on past tournaments or like very good matches and just trying to like learn something from that, right? Because as you're watching a match, it's kind of like you're playing it, right? You're thinking about the decisions these players are making and like what's an optimal line and you know what's going on in here and what would I do in their shoes and that kind of stuff. The second is because you actually want to play the game as well and not just be a consumer of Magic media is I would make friends at your local game store and you know share cards and collections so that you know you guys can build decks effectively, right? So I have a very strong network of friends in my local group, and you know, between all of us, we have, you know, typically a few playsets of everything that's in standard and modern at any given time. So when everyone, you know, wants to build whatever deck, before I go out and like purchase those cards with credit or try and trade for them, I'll just like, you know, message my group of friends and be like, hey, do you guys have four? I have Ugins that shot to $60 this weekend by any chance. And you know, go that route before like, you know, wasting equity, I guess, picking up cards that are, you know, only going to be hot for a little while.
Yeah, that's great advice. I recently got the flip side of that where because, for example, Eldritch Moon is so new that reached out to my friends who were going to Grand Prix Portland with me. Is like, hey, does anybody have, you know, those Lilianas? And of course, nobody had them yet. And so, unfortunately, they're quite expensive. So I totally agree that having a group of friends who has a good solid collection that you're willing to share with is a great way to go about playing Magic without breaking the bank.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So what do you read or whom do you study when it comes to Magic?
So I read a lot of, I guess, LSV's content online and Pat Chapin. And then if there's like those are the people that I consume on a weekly basis, kind of no matter what they're writing about for the most part. And like if I have time, I'll consume like Huey, Owen, and read stuff too. Like obviously, like there's a lot of people that are writing very good content. I just don't have infinite time to consume it all. So right. LSV and Patrick are people that I do like to read about. And then I'll consume like, you know, some of the other Pantheon people as well, or other people that were, you know, writing for Star City.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. And what are your daily rituals that lead to your success?
My daily rituals. Well, I try to get a draft in at least every day.
Okay.
That's cool. Gotta get your fix. Whether I'm either like actually drafting myself or like, you know, watching a draft online. just to kind of like, you know, keep me thinking about that format and thinking about the best way to attack that format. And I also like to see like what other people think is good, because that changes the way that, you know, you can read signals in a draft. Like if all of a sudden everyone thinks this 3-mana 3/2 with whatever, some weird ability is like the greatest green common for one reason or another, when you see it pick 5, then you know, like, oh, okay, well, likely the rest of the people that are drafting online are like me and they're consuming a lot of content as well. So they'll know that this card is the hot business right now. And if I'm getting it late, then that likely means that green's open coming to me. Like, that was kind of a poor example, but, you know, there's lots of cards like that that kind of shift priorities for people as the format evolves, and you kind of want to be on top of that. So I like to always be prepared, and if I consume a draft or do a draft each day, then keeps my skills sharp in that format.
And who have been your mentors as you've gone through Magic?
My mentors, that's a good question. I guess really the only player that I've been playing with since I started is a local player by the name of John Booten. So he was a few years older than me when I was younger and has definitely made me a better player. Like,
over and now that you're older, he's a few years younger than you? Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's right.
If he was a few years older than you when you were younger, and now that you're older, you're the same age, I think.
If he was... You've gone too deep, Sean. You've lost.
Okay. I'm sorry to cut you off. So John Booten, a few years older than you, and you've been playing with him since for many years, it sounds like.
Yeah. Since like Tempest, I guess. I took a break.
Wow.
But yeah, now I like to think like the student has surpassed the master.
There we go. That's great. And then as far as, I guess, pro or limelight players, you mentioned LSV and Patrick Chapin, those are the ones that you look up to?
Yeah, Patrick for like just the wackiness in deck building and his ability to kind of like have every strategy available to him when he starts thinking about a format. I think that's like very useful. He's not one that's like, oh no, like I'm like, there's some players when they look at a format, they're just like, I need to find the best control deck because I am a control player. Where Patrick is like, I need to find the best deck that attacks what people think the best decks are. So I really like that about the way he approaches deck building and metagaming. And then LSV, just for his, I mean, he's a very good player, but I really like his attitude towards the game and his opponents.
Right.
I think he's a
sportsmanship.
Yeah, exactly. He's a very good model for sportsmanship.
So as you travel around to different Grand Prix and Pro Tours around the world, what do you actually take with you? What is inside your tournament bag?
I usually have a binder full of whatever the latest rares are that I've picked up from drafting that I pretend like I'm actually going to use for trading if I get bored at the event, that like never see the light of day and just stay in my bag. And then I have a fresh pack of Dragon Shield sleeves and then 10 of each Zendikar land. And if it's a constructed event, then I'll have my 75 with me as well.
Excellent. 10 of each land, that's awesome. Yeah, 10 of each land is really smart. And then you're 75 for sure. No playmat?
Yeah, sometimes I'll bring a playmat. I mean, I tend to forget it. But, you know, if you go to a GP, then typically you'll just get one. The tables at, like, LGSs are typically very dirty, and they can scum up your sleeves real quickly.
Yep. No kidding there. No kidding. Excellent. So as we pull into the home stretch here, just, I guess, a few more questions to wrap things up. We talked about your journey through Magic, your coming ups, and what you do to prepare for events and what you take with you. We got some good advice for some real beginner players. I want to focus in on the players that are just a few steps behind you. Those of us who we want to, you know, make day two or top eight, you know, our first Grand Prix. What can players do, I guess, to self-evaluate, figure out where they are, where their hangups are, and then address those so they can really push past, you know, whatever's blocking them and go to the next level?
Yeah, it's like a very difficult question to answer broadly. Like, it usually affects each person differently. But I find that a lot of players, when they're testing, they're very focused on winning the match than they are about like actually learning something about how that matchup is played, or, you know, what their deck is doing in that match, or what their opponent's deck is doing in that match. And if you just kind of like not worry about whether or not you win and just think about, you know, what's working and what's not working, you can start, you can spend a lot more mental energy on understanding if you should be changing your strategy or if you should be changing like, for Constructed, for example, or if you should be changing your deck, and have a better idea about like how to go about like what changes you actually need to make to actually like have a positive effect on the outcome, right? So if you're just like, oh, I keep losing, and then at the end of that, you're like, yeah, but like, why were you losing? Or, you know, what could you do to improve your win rate? And you're just like, I don't know, I'm just sick of losing. Like, a lot of players have that attitude, and it's very, you know, it doesn't help you. It doesn't help you in any way. And it usually makes it awkward for your testing opponent. I've had some testing opponents where we're both going to be on the same deck for the tournament, 100%. I just happen to be playing the deck that we're planning on piloting, and they're playing, you know, like the enemy's deck in the matchup, for example. We'll play like a 5-match set, and, you know, I win, meaning our deck won all 5 matches. And at the end of those 5 matches, they're angry that they were unable to win. And it's just like, this is good. Our deck has a good matchup. You're focusing on the wrong things.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's funny. In that situation, my guess is they should be focusing on, all right, if I'm playing the enemy deck, when do I feel in control? What are my key pieces? When you, my opponent, plays this card, I feel on the back foot. Those are the things that you should be focusing in that situation, because then when you switch, and in this particular scenario, you start playing the deck that you're on for the event. Now you know, okay, when they play this card, you know, they feel like they're, you know, hot stuff. So if I remove it, then it puts them on the back foot. Or when I was playing that deck and my opponent played this card, then it was really hard to recover. And those are the kind of things that you should be internalizing instead of just, oh my gosh, I lost, you know, this round of five.
Yeah, exactly. And and even like going kind of one step further, I guess, is that they should also be thinking about, okay, well, even though I'm playing the enemy's deck, I still want to know, maybe there's some changes that I should make to this deck to improve this matchup, right? So, like, I don't know. Like, let's take, for example, like the Esper Dragons versus the Mono White Weenie deck, just from like the previous standard, just to discuss. Like, that deck had a pretty poor matchup because I was playing, you know, the Esper deck's playing Languish. But if you think that Esper is going to be a very popular deck, or you think that Languish decks are going to be very popular, then maybe you find out that, oh, Gideon is actually very good against Languish and very good against decks that have, you know, just Ultimate Price and Grasp of Darkness in their removal suite. So if they were, you know, actively thinking about why they were losing instead of just being angry about it, then they might come to the conclusion of what the next level of that mono white deck would be, for at least some subset of the metagame, right? Which would be to go up to 22 lands and bring those Gideons into the main deck. And then it's like, okay, well, let's test the matchup like that. And it's like, oh, geez, like, you know, now we're in bad shape now. Like, these Gideons are crushing us. You know, we should probably put some Ruinous Pass in our sideboard and see, you know, see if that fixes the matchup or whatever.
Man, I love it. I love this discussion. Absolutely, absolutely amazing. So once again, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Robert, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at RobertLombardi0. That's the number 0. Speaking of which, isn't your picture of like a dog?
Yeah, that's my dog, Phantom. He is the best.
I was going to say, is that your dog? That's awesome. So you see a pretty picture of a dog named Phantom. That is the Robert Lombardi you're looking for. You can hit him up on Twitter, ask him any questions. So we've talked about a ton of really good stuff, Robert, but right here at the end, is there some last parting piece of guidance that you'd like to leave with us? Either something you've already said that you want to emphasize or something new that you want to leave with us here at the end?
I guess just, you know, people say this a lot, but I mean, just make a concerted effort to treat your opponents with more respect, I guess. It'll make the game enjoyable for everyone, and, you know, it'll help build the community, which you want to do if you have any interest in winning, because the larger the community gets, the easier it is for you to win matches.
Robert, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse, and thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. We've loved it. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks, Sean. It was a great time.
Thank you again, Robert. Loved having you on the show. As always, prodigies, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Robert Lombardi. There'll be a synopsis of everything that we talked about, as well as links to any resources that were mentioned. If you like the show, I encourage you to share it with a friend. Magic is a social game, so I know you play with others, either at home or at your game store. maybe even on break with some coworkers. But one of the best ways to give back to the show is to share it with others. I really want to see it grow. I love helping you improve your skills, and I look forward to helping many, many more. So thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate the time that you spend with me and hope that you enjoy the show enough to share it with a friend. And one last quick reminder, if you want to pick up an MTG Pro Tutor t-shirt, go to mtgprotutor.com/t-shirt. There's the podcast logo on the front, and then either Hero Among Planeswalkers or Depart Every Plane Victorious on the back. The design was made by a fellow prodigy, and these shirts will definitely be an awesome way of showing your prodigy pride. They'll be shipped out the first week of September, so go to mtgprotutor.com/t-shirt, grab yours now, and they'll be in the mail in a week and a half or so. Well, thanks so much for joining me today. I hope you have a fantastic weekend. I look forward to joining you again next week. Until then, I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.